Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. My guest today is Mark Podolsky, a.k.a. The Land Geek. Now, you probably remember Mark from being on the show one other time. He's an expert when it comes to investing in land, and that's what we talked about on our last show. He's also an expert in systems, and that is what we're going to talk about today. How you can make yourself irrelevant in your real estate business by adding team members and through automation and by creating systems. So it's great to have you back again today, Mark.
Sharon, thanks so much for having me. It's always, always a pleasure.
Well,
talking with you.
It's always great to have you on the show, and we've had a lot of conversations about this topic today, about how to get yourself out of your own business, and we both agree that that's not an easy task. So for those two or three people on the planet that might not know who you are, how about we just backtrack a little bit and you can tell them a little bit about you and what you do in your business?
Sure. I mean, you know, I started investing in raw land in 2000, and I was doing it part-time. I was a full-time investment banker in a job that was just miserable. I hated it. And sure enough, I did land part-time for 18 months, learned all I could, immersed myself in it, and then 18 months later, I quit my job, and I've been buying and selling raw land full-time ever since, and I love it. And now I'm teaching people as well how to get out of what I call solo economic dependency. That is, if they're not working, they're not making any money, and create some, you know, this incredible passive income machine, Sharon, so they can be like you and just enjoy life.
We're always working toward that goal, I know for sure. You have definitely nailed it, though. I love that solo economic dependency. Did you coin that phrase?
I did. So I used to work with dentists. And
dentists?
And dentists have solo economic dependency. So that is, they're not working in someone's mouth. They're not making any money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doctors, lawyers, freelancers, people with jobs. And the only way to get out of that is to consciously say, okay, I'm tired of trading dollars for hours, and let's create a business. And what the problem is, okay, so you create a business, and now you build yourself another job.
Right.
And you're in the same cycle. So, you know, the real hard part and what we want to talk about today is systems and automation starting from day one. Okay, if I'm the cheapest person I can hire from day one, then how do I get myself out of this? And it's hard. I mean, anyone who tells you this is easy to create systems and automation, their integrity meter is really, really low. I mean, it took me years and years and lots of pain trying to figure this out, because it's so much easier to do things yourself. It's faster. It's more efficient. You know that it's getting done the way you want to get it done, and you have total control. But if you're the one doing that work, then no one's making sales. No one's doing the marketing,
mm-hmm.
right? No one's doing the real, real important work that grows your real estate business, or any business for that matter, but especially in real estate, because when it comes down to, like, you know, buying and selling raw land, we have to focus on two important things, and that's making lowball offers and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is ancillary to that business.
Right.
So if I'm off, you know, tweaking a website or, you know, I don't know, doing deeds or doing paperwork, I'm losing money. But it's, it's frustrating. It's hard. So basically you've got to start, you know, consciously saying, okay, here are the aspects of my business. Here's my workflow. Okay. Who are the people needed for each part of this business? And how can I create a system for each part? And then how do I motivate these people so that they are doing it not just for a paycheck, right?
Exactly,
you don't want
B
players. You want A players. You want people who are pouring their heart and soul into the work, and they believe the mission, and they're A players, and it's emotional labor, and they go above and beyond, and they do the job better than you'd ever even expected them to, and they add to it. Those are the people that you want on your team, and you got to kiss a lot of frogs before you find that prince or princess that will do that. But you just have to know that going in, and you know, it's a great exercise in frustration tolerance. Right?
It's
if you
it's
go
a great,
into it with that attitude, you'll keep at it.
It's a great lesson, too, in so many things in life. You gotta work through the pain. The pain has to get great enough for you to do what you have to do to get the pleasure. And this is a perfect example.
Right, right. I mean, I think I forgot what book I was reading, but someone was saying that, you know, all success comes from being outside your comfort zone. And definitely letting go of the reins of control in your business, in your baby, that is getting outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Managing and training and learning different software systems, that's definitely getting outside of most people's comfort zones. It was outside of my comfort zone, and I fought it for years, Sharon, for years. And finally, I went through enough pain where I'm like, okay, what happens if I just let go of this? And sure enough, you know, the business grows. Well, if I, okay, that felt really good. So now what happens if I let go of this? And it grows even more, and it grows even more. We had 1,100% growth from year over year, from 2014 to 2015, just by adding two more key people. That was it.
Wow.
Huge, huge growth.
Those are pretty amazing numbers, Mark. So let me ask you this. Which comes first, getting your systems and your automation in place or hiring someone, or do you do a little bit of both? In your business, how did you do it?
Okay, so the way I did it was I did it myself first, right? And I, because again, I'm the cheapest person I can hire. So then I would use either a combination. I'm on a Mac, so I use a program called Clarify. And, it's really nice. It's like these training documents, screenshots. And then I use a program called ScreenFlow. But if you're on a PC, you can use Camtasia or there's all types, you know, Screencast-O-Matic. But now I've gone into videos. And so now I make explainer videos or training videos for my VAs. So I do it one time, Sharon, one time, and then that's the training document. And now what I do is I'll get on Skype with them, and I'll share my screen, and I'll show them how to do it, and we'll record it, and then I'll ask them to make the standard operating procedure or the training document so they can train someone else how to do it. Because what I've discovered is that they even learn even better if they're the ones that have to teach someone else how to do it.
So you're
that's
saying
how I do it.
So you have like a lead VA that has VAs under them?
Well, no, I still train all the VAs myself. It would be great if I could do that. But basically, once that VA is trained, then yes, they train the next person down from them.
Okay.
And they create that standard operating procedure. And we use a program. There's a million of them. I like to use a program called Basecamp. It's just real simple. And then we have projects for each aspect of the land investing business. And then, you know, those people are in that project. We all communicate from there. All the training docs are in there. And then we have to-dos and we have deadlines. I mean, deadlines are so important. And communication is so important when you're managing a team. So everyone knows, especially if you're dealing with people overseas, because I have a lot of Filipino VAs, and they just need to know the expectations from day one. you know, this task needs to get done by this day, and then it gets done.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if you don't have that in there, you're like, wait, how come this isn't done? Like, well, I didn't know you wanted it done that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you and I both work on that 12-hour work week, and the 12-month year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell everybody, like, we're on a 12-month year. So every day is a week. Every week is a month. So these are, you know, our goals for that 12 weeks. And that builds in that urgency.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody has to be on the same page. And I've been using a program with my one of my VAs, well, actually two of them. It's called Asana. And I've used that, and maybe I'll need to move up to a different program at some point in time. But for now, I love Asana because it's free. You know, a lot of investors, when they're starting out, I've talked about that a lot, they're on a shoestring budget. But that's one thing I love about that is you can put a date in, you can pop up the calendar and say, I want it back on this date. And it will also send them reminders when they're, because I set myself up as a VA to see what would happen in there. So, it will send them reminders and it will actually say, tomorrow is your deadline and then you've missed your deadline. So,
right.
And then, of course, if they miss too many deadlines, you have to have a come-to-Jesus meeting and decide, you know, that because, like you said, everybody's got to make their deadlines, and as your business grows and you've got multiple VAs, that in itself is something you have to manage.
Exactly, exactly. And then, you know, it was really important what you said, like, then you get to the point where you have that key VA who mm-hmm. really understands everything from 5,000 feet, and then they can manage the other VAs.
Right.
And, but, you know, again, that takes time. So I have someone right now that I'm grooming to get myself out of even just managing all the VAs.
Mm-hmm.
And going through all that. But again, that's a big leap for me to let go of that control.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fear. Are they going to care as much as me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I do it the right way, and they're behind my mission, behind my why, yeah, they will care,
mm-hmm.
and they'll take a sense of pride in the work, just like I did. But it's hard. It's hard to make that leap from, you know, if you've never done it, it's really hard.
Yeah, you know, I have found I've actually been pretty lucky where the VAs are concerned. I've gotten a hold of some very responsible people. I will say that if one of my VAs has a full-time job. He's actually the husband of one of my other VAs, and he does some technical things for me. He does a great job. I get a little bit frustrated at times because, understandably, his job has to come first. So in that situation, he would never be like my lead VA because his job is first. But he is technically, I mean, he is so competent on all the things I could learn, but I don't want to learn them. You know, I don't want to do them, and he's great at those things.
Yeah, and that's great. That's really great. So, you know, when you find a person like that, then it's just, you know, it makes life so much easier, doesn't it?
Oh, I think so. Now let's talk about when you were probably like everybody that finds themselves overworked, you're getting burned out, and you know you've got to make some changes. So you can put down, like you said, all of the aspects of your business and all of the tasks and all of that. But how did you decide which one you wanted to get rid of first? Was it one you didn't like doing or one maybe wasn't your core genius, or how did you decide?
Yeah, so I basically kind of looked at my effective hourly rate, and I was looking at my business from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, okay, well, this is my income, and this is how many hours a week I'm working. This is really what I'm making an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at it from that point of view, mm-hmm. I was shocked. And how, you know, like I think, oh my gosh, I'm making all this money. But then from an hourly rate standpoint, it was like, well, I mean, don't get me wrong. It was very good from from, you know, a normal, you know, anyone would trade with me, but especially because the real estate's so lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
But from a standpoint of growing and the effect of hourly rate, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could do so much better if I had, you know, some of these key systems in place. So what I first then, so I looked at it from that point of view, and that really motivated
mm-hmm.
right, to kind of get out of my comfort zone, because I mm-hmm. knew it wasn't just intellectually, I can do better. It was like emotionally, like, oh my gosh, you know, I can do way better than this. And, you know, I could spend more time with my family, even more than I'm spending now.
Mm-hmm.
And just enjoying my business more and just focusing on the things in my business that really are going to grow the business. And ultimately, I want to just be the person that takes long walks and thinks about the business and breaks stuff to build it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, it's like the pizza parlor owner, right? They got one pizza store, and then, you know, husband and wife team. So then the wife runs the second store. Well, how do they get to the third store? That's mm-hmm. the dilemma, right? So something's
right.
got to break. They got to break something. So I'm like, okay, what can I break? How can I do this? And I basically just committed to it. And, you know, I'm very slow to hire and very fast to fire.
Mm-hmm.
So typically I'll I test everybody, I'll hire three, I'll keep one, and, you know, everyone has to understand my why. This is why we're doing this. And
mm-hmm.
this is how, you know, I want you to get behind. It's not just for, you know, for money. It's a mission, right?
Right.
We want to provide the best buying experience for our investors to buy land, right? And it's not just, you know, a transaction for them now. It's a full experience, because now they're investing in an asset that lasts forever. It'll outlive them. It'll outlive everybody. And we want to make it affordable for them. We want to make it pleasant for them. We want to have a buyer for life,
mm-hmm.
right? This is now, it's not just, you know, a customer. This is a long-term relationship. So how can we do that? How can we differentiate ourselves like that? And then the VAs get real excited, like, oh, my gosh, I'm an integral part of that.
Right.
And then they do even a better job. So, you know, so we start from that point forward. So every training doc, every video I do, we start with the why and the mission. And if you can't get behind it, we're not going to be a good fit. So let me know now, right?
Okay.
And then here's the expectations, here's our communications, and here's the actual work I want you to do, with the expectation that, you know, I don't want you to just do what I tell you to do, right? I want
mm-hmm.
you to do it better than what I'm telling you to do. Where can you put your particular genius into it? And let's see what you come up with, you know? And it's amazing what people come up with.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about this very topic. And I always want to know, what do you think makes your team so successful? And what he told me was, he said, I'm not going to micromanage these people. Now, for him, he's added people one at a time, and they're actually in his office. You know, that he has an acquisitions manager, you know, he has all these different people. But he would
right.
say, you know, I'm not going to micromanage them. Much what you said, but he said it a little bit differently. I'm going to tell them this is the basic job. These are the expectations. This is the end result I want. Maybe it's X number of leads a month or whatever that is. And then I'm going to leave it to you to really put your touch on it and design the job however it works best for you. I'm not going to tell you these are steps 1 through 10 and you have to do them exactly this way. But he said much the same thing, that people came up with ideas, and that his old way of doing some of these things weren't the best way of really getting the job done. They were just the way he had become accustomed to doing them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And then when you throw in software, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we hired a software engineer, and we looked again from 5,000 feet point of view of our business. And now we have our team in place. Now how can we leverage technology to completely automate our business?
Mm-hmm.
So we've developed it. So now when I send out offers, it's completely automated. I throw in the Excel list. The software crunches the assessed values.
Mm-hmm.
We do a formula, and it sends out lowball offers. It actually creates the offer letter, and then it's one push of a button, and then it all goes out via click to mail. It's amazing. It's amazing. The marketing is now automated with APIs, so we disseminate our land listings all over the place one time, click of a button, and the VAs manage that. The closing is automated. The follow-ups are automated. And 98% now of everything we do is software automated.
Wow.
It's incredible. I mean, it's the best time in the world to be running a business. I mean, this would have cost $1 million to develop, I bet, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like nothing. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just workflow software.
Wow.
And some really smart software engineers.
Well, that's impressive for sure. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about push button systems and all of that, and by and large, most of them were anything but. So to hear you say that, I think that makes people think about, certainly about investing in a whole different light. So when you decided to hire your first person, who was your first person? What did they do for you?
Boy.
Do you even remember?
I don't even know if I remember the very first person. I do remember the first key acquisition manager.
Okay.
That really moved the needle in the business. I mean, this is not somebody who was, you know, doing anything for tech or graphic design or, you know,
right.
Any kind of like per task. This is someone that was becoming integral to the business to get me out of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of like a mini mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were managing deal flow and due diligence and marketing and, you know, closing. I gave them limited power of attorney so they could do the deeds for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Frontier Equity Properties is the company that might own that property, but then Mark still has to sign the deed as a managing member and the owner of that property. Well, I gave my acquisition managers limited power of attorney so I can get out of that. So I don't have to even do the paperwork anymore and the customer service side of it and everything. So, when I first hired that person, that was really the time I remember going to bed at night thinking, wow,
mm-hmm.
this could really, really make a difference in the business if this works out. And,
right.
And having that kind of, you know, leap of faith. Because, look, there's no guarantee, right?
Right.
Maybe they don't work that hard. Maybe they just, you know, it's a numbers game, Sharon. I mean, you gotta, again, kiss a lot of frogs to find that prince or princess.
Mm.
And, but this person was highly motivated, highly skilled, and well-trained because, you know, I trained them really well. I really,
mm-hmm.
I really put my all into it and was patient. And when they made mistakes, I wasn't quick to, I said, look, you feel good. Okay, you got to make mistakes because that's how we're going to learn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the key driving factor for growth in Frontier.
Okay, so your acquisition manager was your first key person.
First key person, yeah.
Okay.
And then from there, that acquisition manager then manages the other VAs because, like, I like to handwrite sometimes the envelopes. We'll split test it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say, okay, does the cursive font from click to mail outperform somebody handwriting an offer letter? Because we just sent out lowball offers.
Right.
So we want to see, you know, what what's our response rate if we do it this way or we do it that way. And so I have somebody who's really, really good in South Carolina, VA, and she does all that, those offers. But now I only have to manage her because the acquisition managers manage her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, ultimately I just want to get property reports. We bought this, we sold this.
Okay, so you went at this from maybe a little bit more sophisticated starting point. Let's say that you have a brand new investor and they've maybe done a few deals, and but they're not at the, first of all, they're not at the income level maybe you were when you started outsourcing, but they know that they have to outsource. They've got to get some help. And if they don't want to be where they are today in 5 or 10 years. So how can they do that? Can they pay them, well, with your acquisition manager, were they based, was their compensation based on deals or did they get a salary? So let's look at that. And how could a brand new person afford to do this that did not have a lot of financial resources? So I guess it's kind of a two-part thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think a salary for some people, is demotivating,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think for some people, they need it. So I like to find the people that, because this is a deal business, I want someone who's got an entrepreneurial mindset. I want to eat what I kill.
Right.
So those are my people. And those are the people I look for. I won't hire somebody that has been in, you know, management for 20 years getting some salary. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't
right.
my people.
Right.
I want someone who's aggressive and hungry and a risk taker and really, you know, sees the potential in doing this business and doing it, right? So I only compensate people on results. So they get a portion of the profits on the deal. Now our profits are huge, so our acquisition managers do really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But they only do really, really well if they do the hard work.
Right.
So if they're not doing the hard work, then they're not going to get paid, and I'm not out anything. But essentially, I am out opportunity cost because I could have had someone else doing that work.
Right.
And closing those deals.
And this is kind of where the rub comes in for some people. When I was talking to an investor who did 100 deals a year, he was saying what his percentage was, and I don't remember off the top of my head what it was, but it was a lower percentage that of the deal that his acquisition manager made because of the volume of deals. So
right.
if you take a new investor who's, you know, let's say they're even doing a deal a month, sometimes, you know, people want a JV on the deals and split. You can really lock yourself into a percentage that maybe isn't the correct percentage when you're doing a whole lot of deals. So how do you balance all of that? You know, how do you start out on the right foot is maybe a better question.
Right. I mean, I think you have to really think about the math involved and look at the numbers on that deal
mm-hmm.
or on your average deal and then figure out, okay, how can I compensate somebody for their time and efforts and risk, and I can still make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it's a leap of faith, Sharon, because again, if you're not doing all the work, that frees up your time to really think about and strategize to grow your business. So ultimately, if you're not the one going out and doing the, you know, let's say the rehabbing or meeting mm-hmm. the subs at the house or, you know, dealing with deal flow, if we're talking about housing, right, then that
right.
frees up your time to really think about things that are going to move the needle in your business and allow you to do more volume so you can pay these people more money.
Right, right.
It's like the chicken and egg. I mean, until you let go, you can't grow.
Right. Right, and I had somebody ask me that question specifically. What do I do? How do I start out? You know, do I just JV with somebody 50-50 or, you know, that's where that question kind of came from. They were asking me, you know, they just didn't know what was fair and equitable and would allow them to position themselves as the business owner, as the person who made more than the people working for them, I think was kind of what he was getting at.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you just got to know your numbers, ultimately. I mean, I wish there was a hard, fast rule, but every niche in real estate is different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my margins are 300% to 1,000%. So I can definitely pay someone, you know, differently in my niche than maybe somebody could who's wholesaling houses, right?
Right, right.
Because there's just not as much profit in each deal, but they could do tremendous volume and, you know, and do it that way. So, you know, you can skin a cat so many different ways. You could do, you know, a small salary plus commission plus, you know, performance bonus, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could just do all commission plus performance bonus. You could just do straight salary if that's the kind of person that, you know, I wouldn't do that, but
yeah,
you know, you could do that. And then,
yeah.
You know, then, I mean, I've got a buddy of mine, he works for a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy likes to say, if you pay people peanuts, you get monkeys.
Yeah,
he literally overpays everybody. And he overpays for every position. But I'll tell you what, they know they're overpaid and they work really hard, Sharon. And it's not the culture I'd want. I mean, it's kind of a culture of fear because
mm-hmm.
they feel like if they don't perform, they could be fired at any time
mm-hmm.
because they're so well compensated.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now, in our example, that's not where most people are going to be when they first start in real estate, right?
Right.
But but if you wanted to, I mean, you could certainly get an investor. And part of that money could go towards your acquisition manager, and part of it could go towards the deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good. Those are good tips. I think you really nailed it, though. Each business is different, and some people, you know, start out with an acquisition manager. I think that's an important person to start out with myself. But other people started out with different parts, so it. And each business is completely different. Now, we
right.
talked a little bit about your procedure for hiring someone. I also do screencast videos, and I do Skype interviews because we both know that not everybody is really completely accurate when they describe their skills. So I think if you,
right.
you can get a good idea by talking to someone. But if you're going to train, let's say you're going to hire for a key position in your organization, which one is more experience, the mindset and or experience, what you think you can get out of the person or their experience, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think with hiring, you kind of have to get, well, I know for me personally, experience is not nearly as important as attitude and mindset and sort of an entrepreneurial spirit,
mm-hmm.
right? I can train them, right?
Right.
And sometimes if they're experienced in real estate, they could come in with bad habits.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just, you know, again, it's like one of those things, like it just depends on you and your management style. Because I have other friends who are entrepreneurs, and they say to me, you know, Mark, the best indicator of success is the past. So if they've been successful in the past, they'll be successful in the future, right? But those are different industries.
Right.
I just think in real estate, this is a hustling business,
mm-hmm.
and you got to get people who can hustle and want to hustle. And are compensated to hustle. So I think there might be other, you know, aspects of real estate where you might hire someone who's in marketing, right, or social media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you might want to look at their past experience and have somebody who's more experienced. I mean, I've got a social media manager, but I hired her based on her experience because she was with a big social media firm.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were paying, you know, huge social media buys. And so if they trusted her to do it, like I'm not spending $1 million a month in social media, but this company trusted her to kind of handle that. So I thought, well, I'll hire this person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's $20 an hour, but my ROI is probably, huge on that. So,
right.
And she's great. And I don't have to train her because I don't know how to train her. I don't know anything about it. So it depends on also, like, your experience in that aspect. So there's going to be parts where you're going to want to hire people who have some track record of
mm-hmm.
success. And then there's going to be other parts where you're just going to want somebody who's got a great mindset and a great attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you want to work with people you like.
Exactly.
They want to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big factor, too. You know, it might be someone who's so talented, so skilled, but they're a prima donna.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes more of your time to keep them happy than it's worth.
Yeah, I've known some of those people.
Right.
What about now? We've talked a little bit about, you know, I'm like you. I think if you compensate your people well, I think you're more apt. And if you get a hustler to begin with, they're more apt to perform. But like you, I think you have to build a culture. You know, I certainly wouldn't want somebody working for me that I couldn't trust.
Right.
Somebody that I didn't like. And, you know, I don't care how great they would be, there would always be that conflict there between us. So I think that's really important. But beyond the compensation, do you have any tips for holding on to good employees or good team members? We won't call them employees, good team members.
Absolutely. I like to do what I call wow gifts. So every quarter, a wow gift.
Oh, okay.
A wow gift is when you get this thing in the mail, you go, wow. And mm-hmm. so I start from day one in interviewing and getting to know the person. I want to know what they really like to do outside
mm-hmm.
of work
mm-hmm.
and what their passions are in life. And every quarter, if they're doing a great job, I want to send them a wow gift. And so I have a VA, and that's one of her jobs is, you know, we create an onboard processing file, and we get to know these people. You know, are they married? Do they have kids? How old are the kids? What are their hobbies? What do they like to do? What are their aspirations in life? And then, and I'll give you an example. Like yesterday, I sent out my VA sent out like a margarita kit from
mm-hmm.
Crate and Barrel because one of my team members loves margaritas. So I thought, you know what, let's do this. And I think with shipping, it costs like $40, Sharon,
mm-hmm.
right? But when they get it, they're going to like, wow.
Wow.
And
mm-hmm.
it's not about the money. It's about, oh, my gosh, this person cares.
Yeah. They took the time
awesome.
To know what
they
I like.
They took the time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's great. I've got people that they want to go to their local spa. So we get them,
mm-hmm.
you know, a massage at that spa. But I've got people that, love a night out and going for sushi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll go on Google or Yelp and we'll look around their neighborhood and find the best sushi restaurant. We'll send them a gift card.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just these little touches, I think, create this culture of, okay, I want to work harder for this person because they really care. And again, it always comes down to mission as well. I mean, they've got to
mm-hmm.
understand their mission
mm-hmm.
and be behind it too. But I think those little touches play, you know, make a big difference when someone's like, wow.
That's an excellent idea. You know, I think that's a much better description than saying I'm going to give somebody a bonus or give them
yeah,
a wow
yeah.
gift.
Yeah, in fact, there's been studies done that money is actually a demotivator.
Wow.
Yeah. After a certain point, I mean, obviously, they're going to have enough to live. But after that,
mm-hmm.
right, then it almost becomes about something else.
About something else, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. So do you have, for someone just getting started in this whole process, do you have some words of wisdom for them before we close out the show today?
I think my words of wisdom would be just know from day one that if you really want to grow and if you want to be an entrepreneur and not a solopreneur, that you've got to start thinking from day one, how can I make myself irrelevant to the business? Because that's a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Schultz at Starbucks isn't, you know, whipping up your frappuccinos or cappuccinos.
Right.
Right? He's thinking all day long, how can I grow Starbucks? So you need to be the CEO of your real estate business. And from day one, think like that. And everything that you're doing now, figure out a way to get out of it and start creating these systems from day one. And
mm-hmm.
and realize it's going to suck. But embrace the suck. Embrace suck, because ultimately you have to have that leap of faith. Like, okay, you just have to know, even though it's you're going through it and it's painful and you're dealing with these people and they're not doing it like the way you want to do it and it's not going well and it's rocky and you're uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you can't grow. You can only grow by how good your team is. So it's mm-hmm. worth making that upfront investment from day one and just doing it and keep doing it. Ultimately, you'll get to the other side of it. And, you know, I'm taking half days on Fridays now. I mean, it's great. So the business just runs itself.
I think that's great. And, you know, that's one reason I wanted to have you in particular on the show today. I know you've successfully done this, and it's certainly something that people struggle with. So, thanks so much. You know, folks, be sure to stop by Mark's site, The Land Geek. I'm going to put the link on there. He's got a freebie for you called The Passive Income Blueprint. He's also got a couple of podcasts. So how about you tell folks about those, Mark?
Yeah. The Best Passive Income Model podcast is on iTunes. And then there's The Land Geek podcast, which we don't update anymore, but I think there's 90 episodes for just mm-hmm. the Land Geek podcast as well, which is really more focused on buying and selling land. But
mm-hmm.
the Best Passive Income Model podcast, which we interview experts like Sharon Vornholt and learn, more about, it's not just about land, and it's about other areas of real estate, mm-hmm. just success in general.
Well, and I can tell you both those sites are great sites, so be sure to check those out. And I will put the link, all these links in there, so you don't have to worry about that. And once again, Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Sharon, thanks so much for having me. I'll come anytime.
I'm
a huge fan of Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog.
Well, I'm gonna definitely have you back, and I think I like having some people back, because they, as my listeners grow their businesses, I think you can even tell them the same thing, but they hear it differently because they're in a different position at that point in time. And I love doing these entrepreneurial podcasts too, because in the end, that's what we don't really want to create another job for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, we want to scale, we want to grow, we want to keep mm-hmm. growing, and ultimately build something that's way bigger than we ever thought possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with that 100%. So count on it. I'll have you back. But for now, this is Sharon Vornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, and I'll be back real soon with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. Thanks, guys.